Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacevic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. It is my pleasure to welcome Howard Penrose to the podcast. Welcome back, Howard.
Hi, thank you very much.
So Howard, previously we talked at the SMRP annual conference. We talked about maintenance of electrical motors, and we're going to talk about cybersecurity today. But before we get into that, you are the president of MotorDoc LLC. You were the web editor-in-chief for IEEE, and I know you've heavily involved with IEEE and SMRP still to this day.
Yes.
Very brief bio. What else can you tell us about yourself?
Having started way back in the pre-military days, I worked for Amoco Labs doing oil analysis on the first synthetic oils, such as Ultimate. That was high school, and ran the lab and performed a lot of the testing and mixing of some of those materials in order to test them on vehicles and railroad. Then joined the Navy and discovered I liked electric motors, ran a motor repair shop responsible for 38 vessels. Then left there and went to Dreiselker immediately. And while there, in 1991, there was some other things that happened in the meantime, but 1992 had an opportunity to start getting involved in a program with the Department of Energy called Motor Challenge, which was part of the Energy Policy Act of 1992. So during that period of time, got very involved with the Department of Energy. My dad was at Argonne National Labs, heading up one of the divisions related to the Department of Environment. So utilized his resources and my resources and started doing some real research on energy production and reliability. Got heavily involved in working with research organizations throughout the U.S. and Canada and several abroad, including Australia. And in 1997, joined the University of Illinois at Chicago, heading up the Energy Resources Center as a senior research engineer, focused on the industrial area, and also teaching industrial engineering. So I was an adjunct professor there, and then left there and went to Altest. And I think most listeners know of my time in motor diagnostics, which I joined Altest to do research in that area. I'd had experience with all of the testing technologies in the past, but really wanted to understand some of the newer technically newer technologies, including things like electrical signature analysis and motor circuit analysis. And, things have occurred since then, including my involvement in IEEE, which started in 1993, and also SMRP, which getting on the board happened in about 2008. I was Chicago section, 2009 I was on the international board. So during that period of time, had been involved in government relations with IEEE, 1994 through 96. I was the Midwest representative for energy to the United States Activities Board, which was their lobbying group. So when I was on the board at SMRP, and when we started working with our present management company, said, why aren't we involved in government relations, working with the stuff that would directly impact us. So, 2015, we made our first visit to the Hill. 2014, we did a first visit, but 2015, we made our real visit on the Hill. There was a handful of us, and at that point, I met a number of people, one of which was Chris Sheppis. And that's when I discovered I was involved in cybersecurity. I didn't realize that beforehand. And then also got involved in Smart Grid and a few other things. which I was already involved in going back to IEEE in the 1990s and the Energy Resources Center. We were already investigating smart grid and renewable energy sources and so on. Other things I was involved in during all this time was the development of hybrid vehicles at General Motors and the development of heavy construction tractors at John Deere as a consultant focused on the electric machines and control systems. So a little bit of everything. I get to have fun one day in a salt mine, the next day on a wind turbine. Troubleshooting complete systems. So anything driven by an electric machine. And that's kind of my history.
Excellent.
So here we are.
Excellent. And you've been involved for cybersecurity for quite a period of time. How long have you been involved within that then?
Officially or unofficially?
We'll do both.
Okay. Unofficially, I was a teenager in high school back in the 1980s when messing around on networks and computer systems were considered interesting. We saw cybersecurity issues back then and hackers as the cool kids, right? So now I jump forward to 2015. Having been a computer programmer, having done other things, developed systems, now, working towards releasing an electrical signature analysis, continuous monitoring IoT device. 2015, when I met with Chris Sheppis and he and I discussed some of the horror stories that occur in the field, and realizing that some of the root cause failure analysis projects I'd done in the past, in particular around electrical systems, where we couldn't come to a direct conclusion, may have actually been cyber related. As the NIST puts it, cyber physical related failures. There's been a significant number of attacks on all of us, and I think virtually everybody's been affected at one time or another. So, saw that as a significant issue and had sat back a little bit and did a little bit of a study and then published it in July 2016 Solutions magazine and had sat there. And when I was drafting this article on IoT and cybersecurity, I was sitting in a hotel restaurant, and I actually cite this in the article. And while I'm writing this article about what the impacts are on cybersecurity and the study we did where we found in over 100 trade magazines, only one mention of cybersecurity, but all of the discussion around you need to implement IoT devices now, primarily written by the manufacturers, I listened to two salesmen that were going in to discuss a maintenance system that was internet enabled with one of their customers. And they were talking about how they were going to convince this manager to go work around the IT department to do a demo. So basically to work around their IT department, not inform them that they were going to use a cell-based system to broadcast information detected through this process IoT device. I sat there amazed because I went back and thought through how many times when I was a consultant at General Motors or U.S. Steel and some of these other places, we had vendors come in and sit down and do that very thing, describe to us how they could work around so we wouldn't have to tell IT that we were going to install a network-enabled device, either on a roundabout way like a cell network or directly into the internet, public internet at a site. And during this discussion with Chris Sheppis, who by the way was the head on the Democrat side of the Department of Homeland Security at the time, he's since retired, it became very scary. And then I was introduced through one of the folks at Sheila Jackson Lee's office, as well as some other cybersecurity folks on the Hill, a software that's readily available to search for open IP addresses in industrial systems. Costs either a security guy who works for companies that do the work, or a cyber criminal, $35 for a lifetime license. And I've used it since. It's called Shodan.io, and I've used it since to demonstrate live the ability to look at people's SCADA networks that they thought were separated by, you know, air. Or other systems that are wide open. Good news is in some of those efforts, including an article I wrote on one brand of wind turbine, small industrial, not utility scale, but industrial scale, quarter megawatt, where they had no security built into their systems at all, was able to show any of their turbines at any time exactly what it was producing, and would have only had to press a button to take over the turbine. It's pretty scary out there.
So this cybersecurity concern is a real concern. It's things organizations need to be thinking about, planning for, preparing for, correct?
Absolutely. And the good news is organizations such as NIST, the Department of Commerce was tasked with cybersecurity and smart grid. The focus is primarily on protecting the grid and other national infrastructure, but the benefits are definitely there. And one of the things we did with the Society for Maintenance and Reliability Professionals was got involved with the Stop, Think, Connect program, which is Department of Commerce, and gives advice on some of the things you need to be concerned about with cybersecurity. And getting involved in some of the information and sitting in on some of the committee meetings and presenting. I mean, I've presented a couple of times to DOD, other government agencies, and even the White House on concerns related to cybersecurity. And everything from, homeowner related stuff that impacts all of us to automotive and industrial. I mean, one of the scariest things that occurred was in 2018 when they discovered that a particular attack was performed on safety systems at petrochem plants in Saudi Arabia. So they were shutting down safety valves. That was the first attack on a safety-related system that was successful in industry. So now the attacks, and a lot of them use the same machine learning and augmented intelligence systems and algorithms that we use to try to better our systems, to go out and automatically or remotely hack systems. So there's we refer to them by different names. Some of them are, humorous sounding, but really are methods of malware being installed on safety systems, control systems, and worse, the creation of botnets by putting malware onto things like security cameras and home-owned IoT devices and smart bulbs, which was a real scare in 2016. I'd say probably the biggest thing that you can think of related to this would have been the assault through the Zigbee networks of security cameras and smart bulbs that took down Netflix and several other large internet-based systems for a number of hours back in 2016. So it's of a great deal of concern. And I've done a number of articles lately on the weaponization of our own IoT devices to be used against us or others.
All right. So you mentioned a lot of modern or current systems. Are legacy systems that a lot of these industrial companies are operating, are those at risk as well?
They're at higher risk, especially if they're not if they're not having any type of security update. As a matter of fact, that's one of the biggest things now when you look at an IoT device is verifying that it's able to receive regular security updates, how those are delivered, how they're uploaded, and when those end. What's the plan when a device is no longer going to be supported by an organization? So when you have a lot of legacy devices, let alone legacy computer systems or even security software that's not kept up to date, you've opened yourself up to huge potential risk. Whether it's denial of service, which means your data gets encrypted, and then you pay an amount of money to get the code to return it back to service, which now they're going a step further and they're just saying, okay, give us money, you send the money, and then they just delete your entire system. So they make money off you and then destroy you. It's getting to be a pretty scary world for us and pretty lucrative for cyber criminals.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out iridicio.com for a free copy of their ebook, A Smarter Way of Preventative Maintenance. This ebook will allow you to review your current maintenance program and eliminate the non-value-added work you are doing, which is most likely causing you more downtime than it is preventing. www.iridicio.com.
So what can organizations do to start learning about these risks, and what are some immediate steps they can do to start mitigating or protecting some of their systems?
Well, the real word is resiliency, ensuring that things are backed up on a routine basis, ensuring that IT is performing regular security scans and things are being kept up to date, that IoT devices have a security system in place and that default logins and passwords are removed, that maintenance personnel are taught how to ensure that everything is closed when they're finished. And I'll say the only time I've run into an organization that had employees that fully understood the impact of the cybersecurity in their facility is a paper company in Canada, where I walked in and that was one of the things we were looking at in the reliability program, because it's one of the things I focus on as well, is how is your cybersecurity set up? And I normally get blank stares saying, oh, it's IT's problem. In this case, they outlined what a fence was, what their barriers were, air gaps. You know, they understood the terms, they understood how their devices were set up and why it was important that they didn't have, certain devices that they were using in place. So I rarely run into that. So a big part is education. And in fact, at SMRP, we're supporting legislation that's going through right now that would provide training for trade schools and apprenticeships on the importance of cybersecurity. The number one defense is awareness. And since we wrote the article in 2016 and it got out, and people started questioning what cybersecurity was, I've noticed, and as well as have others, that a growing number of articles cover the term cybersecurity, and people are explaining how their devices are secure and everything else. Whereas prior to that article, there was nothing. It was dead silence. And I brought up in a couple of meetings, hey, that's great new equipment, but how's your cybersecurity set up? And they'd say, well, that's not your problem. That's IT's problem, which is a problem in itself. So the biggest thing is understanding what the cyber risks are. That means everybody, because it's not just IT's problem. It's our problem. The number one way that people are getting in from the outside, other than email, meaning, you know, opening a malicious email, is literally the maintenance systems, because the maintenance systems will be installed and left wide open because the people installing them have no idea that what they did was left them open. They didn't set the security, they didn't change logins and passwords, and they left them open. Or they weren't aware that they're not supposed to have them on an open network that they're supposed to be air gapped. An air gap means that there's a separation between the devices on an internal network versus the external internet. I can go on at any time on a Shodan and pop up, you know, 18 million port 80s being opened in the United States at any given time. And it's usually much higher than that. It's actually lower now. I used to say 40 million. But since people are becoming more aware of cybersecurity, we're starting to watch the number of open systems decline.
So people are taking the right steps. They are starting to mitigate those risks. Now, with all these risks, why should organizations still look at connectivity, IoT, and all that other stuff? Does the benefits outweigh those risks?
In many cases, they do. The problem I run into is people rush forward to implement Internet of Things technologies without actually having a strategy. I mean, in reality, why do you need that device? Does that device provide you the information that is going to support your organization in some way? And often people will apply connected devices for the sake of applying connected devices. They don't actually use the data. So if you aren't really going to use the data, don't connect it. I mean, seriously, why do you need a smart bulb? I mean, you know, some people say, okay, I can turn on and off the lights remotely. Well, you know, there's other ways of doing that. Is it necessary? You know, is a bulb that tells me it's burned out really needed? Or, you know, in my household, it's not. But there may be applications where it is. But the bulb manufacturer wants as many people as possible buying that bulb. So the idea of a lot of the remote networks is not truly necessary. I deal a lot with wind turbines. So wind turbines are distributed power generation. You need a lot of information coming in. And as a matter of fact, in some cases, they have too much information coming in. How much of that information is needed? And I bring that one up because when visiting some sites and when I went back and sat down with one of the offices when we were talking about some legislation that was going up, they said, well, look at wind, you know, new technologies, they're very secure. And I said, that's funny. I was just at a site where the manufacturer provides an iPhone app that allows you to turn off and on the towers. And they were in shock. I said, that's not supposed to happen. Well, those systems still exist now, but since bringing it up and having it addressed, there's more security built into those systems. And what's really important, and they're not on individual iPhones anymore. They're on owned iPhones by the organizations or iPads. But the when we start looking at these things, it really comes down to the strategy. You know, what information do you really need? And because the more systems you install, the more systems you have to pay attention to, track, update, and be aware that any one of those systems that's the weak spot is the entrance to your system. So, and we had an instance, I met with a large company, I'll leave them nameless, but it was kind of nice because the maintenance, the reliability guys asked me to come in and talk to their senior management, which included a couple of board members. And it happened to come up. I asked the question, what is your cybersecurity strategy? And the person who was on the board said, well, we have a strategy and we're implementing this, this, and this. And the reliability folks looked in shock and they said, we don't need that. We need this, this, and this. They lost communication. And the meeting resulted in two things. One was a new look at that strategy for IoT, remotely connected devices, but also the inclusion of reliability in board decisions, which was huge. So just that discussion about cybersecurity then opened things up and led to a path of discussion between the C-level and the reliability level.
All right. Very, very cool. Now, one of the questions I routinely hear about is what are the top two or three steps that organizations need to do to make sure they're taking the right steps towards cybersecurity, preventing those risks, those sorts of things? What are the top two or three things they need to be doing?
Number one, awareness. Just being aware. When I became aware, I didn't realize it wasn't apparent to me the risk. Matter of fact, immediately the next day following my meeting with Chris Sheppis, I walked into a site and noted that somebody had installed a USB Wi-Fi device so they could work from their hotel into a secured SCADA system and broadcast it through a public network. Just little things like that. Or they switched out at another location, switched out some power monitoring device, in this case, multi-lens, and didn't close port 80. Once I was aware, I was able to identify problems. So awareness, number one. Number two, logins and passwords. If you're connecting a device into the system and your maintenance, have to remember, if your company gets hacked, that affects everybody, including your livelihood, right? So when they're connecting up a system, verify whether it has logins and passwords, remove the defaults, make sure IT is involved. If you're doing a connected device and there is not an understanding of security in that device, then there's a problem. Stop. So, for instance, the device we use is hardwired, and then you're either connected directly to a server and using its security, or you use secure VPN if you're going to broadcast the information so that you have a secure system. It's the only two ways you can utilize our system. So it reduces risk, basically. So understanding logins and passwords. And one of the biggest things anybody can do at any level, because we're all connected now, is be aware of where you're surfing, use security on your system. If your security software is saying, do not go to this website, do not go to that website. Even large websites can be infiltrated and broadcasting malware. And also emails. As a matter of fact, one of the favorite things that IT departments do now in larger companies and some small companies is they will have a security firm send out fake malware. So, or fake phishing emails, meaning that they'll send out an email, it looks important, it's all to try to trick you to open it. You open it up and you get an invitation to a training class. So be aware that if you receive an email and it does not look right, because now what's happened for free, it used to be I could go up in whatever email I was doing, highlight the email and see where it really came from. Just see through the masked email. Now they can send this stuff through websites and they can literally emulate anybody's email address. And it looks like it came from that address. So be aware that if you're receiving something saying, hey, here's your invoice, open up this Adobe Acrobat, and everybody thinks Adobe Acrobat's safe. Well, it was until you could embed Microsoft and macros into PDF. They're not as safe anymore. So you see this attachment, it says it's a PDF or a Word document, and they say this is your invoice, and you don't recognize the company or whatever else it came from, do not open that email. Because once you open it, you've bypassed your security. And you can launch malware and other malicious stuff onto your computer. The target stores, the issue with all of the millions of credit card numbers and related information that was stolen, started out as an email to a third-party HVAC company in Pennsylvania. They were connected because they did work for Target. They were connected. And when they next went and sent an invoice to Target, they launched the software on the Target network. The the cyber criminals then spent a week figuring out the logins and passwords for the administrators that they were able to get information back on. As soon as they did, they got into the point of sale systems and launched a worm that infected every point of sale system connected to the network. That sent packets of information with all the credit cards on an hourly basis out to these criminals for almost 4 weeks before it was shut down, because it just so happened that a cybersecurity blogger heard about it on the internet, blogged about it, turned in the issue, and they were able to discover it. Otherwise, it would have gone on indefinitely. So awareness, make sure you're setting security, make sure you're using security, and beware of your emails.
All right, excellent. I took away 4 things from that. The awareness, the login and passwords, the email practices, and then also the network access. Be aware of what network you're connecting to. Make sure it's secure. Like you said, use of VPNs and various things like that. So 4 great things to take away. Now, what is the one action you want our listeners to take away from the conversation about cybersecurity today?
Get involved. Be aware. It's not something I do for a living. It's something I do as a volunteer. It's not challenging to get that information. It's broadcast, it's published continuously. Being just aware that that can occur, keeping your eyes open and noticing things and bringing them to management's attention or IT's attention immediately can save you, can save your company, and can allow you to remain profitable. I mean, some of these attacks right now, as I mentioned earlier, are not aimed just at collecting money. They're actually aimed at causing harm and shutting down security systems, impacting your controls and safeties, because more and more of them are becoming automated.
All right. Excellent. Great words of advice there. Now, Howard, I know you're a busy guy. You're involved in a lot of things. But before we go, where can people find out more about you? What events or activities are you involved in? Is there a favorite resource you want to share with our listeners on this topic?
Okay. So you can find me on LinkedIn. Look up my name, Howard Penrose, or MotorDoc. And then my website, motordoc.com, which I have a lot of free resources, you can look it up, including by cybersecurity. For cybersecurity directly, go to the smrp.org website and go into government relations. We have a whole section on some of the programs, including access to little one pagers that will help you provide information to your coworkers on the importance of cybersecurity and how to protect yourselves. I'd say those are probably my 2 biggest and favorite resources. And finally, NIST.gov or Department of Commerce. Either one, they have huge sections right now because it's been determined that cybersecurity is the number one threat to the United States democracy.
All right. Excellent. Bunch of great resources there. I will make sure to link to all those in the show notes so people can easily find them, connect with you, connect with SMRP, and learn more about the cybersecurity. Well, Howard, I want to thank you for taking the time today to talk to us about cybersecurity, your experience with it, all the different things that are going on. I know it's top of mind with many of our listeners as they look to capture data, big data, cloud, all that wonderful stuff. It's a concern that they keep hearing about, and it's good to create that awareness. So thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. it ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.